in Africa. The stone industries, oh, by the way, I'm using a couple of terms that may sound confusing to you. Culture versus industry. Now, culture, remember, is anything that has been adapted by man, that has been modified by man. So the culture would include the use of fire. Culture would include the construction of stone rings or of particular shapes of hearts. Or a culture might include one kind of camp in a certain environment versus another kind of camp in another environment. It's different ways of modifying the environment. Very frequently you'll hear me lapse into the use of the term industry or industries. Now this refers only to the stone tools that they were making, the different kinds of technologies combined with the different kinds of the different types of tools they were making and using. So I'll slide back and forth between these. It's just a failing I have. But remember, culture really is a broader concept. It encompasses more than just the stone tools themselves. Now, last time we were talking about the oldest industries in Africa, the Oldowan industries. This name is derived from Olduvai Gorge, and it refers to an industry that is comprised of choppers, cores, and utilized flakes. Okay. They used the flakes as tools, but they did not shape the flakes. They did not change the edge shapes to make tools that we can recognize as typologically distinct from other kinds of tools. So the Oldowan industry may be as old as 2.5 million years, and it lasts in some places in Africa until approximately 1 million years. Now there are other industries that are developed before 1 million years. One is called the developed Oldowan. And in the developed Oldowan, the only significant difference is that the choppers become pointed. Choppers normally have only one edge retouched to form a cutting edge, but in the developed Oldowan, in fact, you get choppers where two edges come together. Very crudely made tools, but this indicates that we've got a convergence of edges. It seems to have a more widely usable frame for doing whatever they're doing with choppers, probably chopping bones or perhaps even meat with the developed Oldowan. Yet, and remember I talked about at 1.5 million years, the Karari industry. This was the first crudely shaped hand axes. Very ugly in a way, deep scars, very jagged edges. This begins about 1.5 million years ago. Now this is all going on in Africa. At this time it would seem, perhaps, that the only cultural activity, the production of industries, is only taking place in Africa. It is not until we see the emergence of a hominid ancestor, or an ancestor of Homo sapiens, called Homo erectus, that we begin to see the spread of cultural activity outside the continent of Africa. Now, just when Homo erectus begins is, again, a matter of controversy. We have some very big gaps in the datable record in terms of the potassium-argon dating to indicate exactly when Homo erectus became recognizable as a distinct ancestor from Homo habilis, the earlier form that's probably responsible for the older one. There are, for example, some claims for Homo erectus in China and Java at 1.5 million years ago. But these claims are simply based on bad dating in Africa. They look at the kinds of stone tools, look at the kinds of bones in China and Africa, and they say, well, this looks like something we've got in Africa at 1.5 million. but those dates in Africa at 1.5 million are not good. So it's hard to say exactly when Homo erectus starts moving out into Asia and Europe. I would guess that it's around the 1 million mark. There are some industries in France, for example, central France, that indicate a 1 million year date, not firm, but fairly flabby, that would indicate that Homo erectus, who was making these stone tools, has left Africa as the homeland and is now colonizing other parts of the world. Before we go into the beginnings of the cultural activity here in the Near East, there are some more terms that I'd like to define, because I'm going to be lapsing into these things. I don't want to use jargon, but unfortunately these terms say a lot in a single word. And if you can be, if I give them to you, perhaps you won't throw things at me when you get confused later on, or maybe you will, I don't know. Now, the oldest kinds of stone tool industries belong to a large group of associated cultures called the Lower Paleolithic. In explaining this, all I can say is lower means early, Paleolithic means Old Stone Age. So this is the earliest Old Stone Age. This is followed, believe it or not, by the Middle, and finally by the Upper. All three large groups occur in the Pleistocene period, in that period of ice ages up in Europe and Northern Asia. We can give a few general dates. The Lower Paleolithic ends at about 80,000 BC in most of the world. The Middle Paleolithic begins at around 80,000 and ends at about 35,000. And finally, the Upper Paleolithic begins at about 35,000 and ends somewhere between 12 and 14,000, depending on where you are in the world. So today we're going to be talking about the earlier parts of the early Old Stone Age. We'll talk about, in fact, the Lower Acheulean, and the Middle Acheulean. And yes, there is a Upper Acheulean, and in fact, there's a Final Acheulean. We'll talk about that next time. Now, Acheulean is a culture term. Okay, now we're starting to talk about more than just the stone tools themselves. We'll get into different kinds of hunting practices. In fact, we finally get into hunting rather than scavenging, as the Homo habilis ancestors seem to have done. We see a lot of regional variation in the Acheulean, from, for example, Europe to eastern India to southern Africa. In fact, I might as well give you the differences in the various Acheuleans right now. In terms of age, the Lower Acheulean begins at approximately 1 million. Years ago. In some places it might actually begin at 1.2 or even 1.3 million. But again, we're in some of these fuzzy areas of dating where the dating is not very accurate. The Middle Acheulean would begin at approximately a half a million. The Upper Acheulean begins at approximately 200 to 250,000. And finally, the Final Acheulean begins at about 100,000 and lasts until 80,000, approximately. And the major differences between the Lower Acheulean and the older one, the preceding one, is the introduction of hand axes. Hand axes are, I'll show you that Karari industry hand axe, a very crude pointed thing, retouched on both sides of the piece, not just on one face of the stone tool, but on both sides of the stone tool, and it has convergent sharp convergent edges. Okay, so that's a hand axe. What hand axes were used for, we don't really know. We suspect primarily butchering, but they may also have been used in woodwork. But here again, we're running into a stone wall. We don't really know what they're doing. In the Lower Acheulean, these hand axes are very, very crude. They're usually very long, very thick, wide, with absolutely only hard hammer technique. Very often, a hand axe will be formed with no more than five or six blows of a stone, you know, of a stone hammer on each side. Very, 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 very different compared to what we see in the final Acheulean, for example, when we get into the epitome of stoneworking technique, the fineness of control. In the Lower Acheulean, we also see, as in the older one, the use of flakes as tools, but we still do not see very much intentional reshaping of the edges. They used the flakes as they came off the core, no matter what the shape was. Primarily, these would have been used for cutting meat and perhaps for shaping wood, but they don't change the shape of the edge of the flake on purpose. In the middle Acheulean, we see two things happen. In the earliest part, at about 500,000 BC, one of the things that separates the middle Acheulean from the lower Acheulean is the introduction of soft hammer technique at approximately 500,000 years. With this technique, they produce smaller negative bulbs of percussion on hand axes. So if you look at the edge of this thing, they've been knocking these flakes off the tool with a bone or antler hammer. Instead of being very jagged, as is almost always the case in the lower Acheulean, that edge becomes much straighter, because the negative bulbs are much smaller by using the soft hammer technique. At sometime around 300,000 BC, we begin to see the first crude attempts of the Levallois technique. All right, this technique that becomes almost synonymous with Neanderthal man a little bit later, 100 to 150,000 years later. Levallois technique becomes a revolution, in a sense, in terms of the efficiency of using stone resources for making tools. The Upper Acheulean sees widespread use of the Levallois technique in some places. Some places it does not. One of the major differences between the Upper and the Middle Acheulean is in the shapes of the hand axes that are produced. Again, they're using soft hammer technique, so they're making nice hand axes. In the Upper Acheulean, we get the long, elongated hand axes, more or less triangular in shape, whereas in the Middle Acheulean, they're more or less round, squat things, not terribly triangular at all. Furthermore, in the Upper Acheulean, we see very nicely developed flake tools, where they're intentionally changing the shapes of the edges into nice regular forms. The flake comes off and they want to use that as a tool. They will change the shape of that edge to a nice symmetrical convex edge, or they might make it perfectly straight, or they might make it perfectly concave. A wide variety of special shapes in recurrent patterns. These aren't happening by accident. They're doing it over and over and over again. They know exactly what they want. They're developing a very well-made, standardized toolkit. Finally, in the final Acheulean, we see the epitome of stone tool work, especially in the hand axes. The hand axes are functional tools, after all. On the other hand, some of these hand axes are so beautifully made that attention is focused on symmetry, that it looks like there's some element of beauty, to this 20th century eye, anyway. These people are not satisfied with something crude but effective. They want it to be beautiful and effective. It seems to be people are taking pride in the quality of their stone tool working. Again, you can see elaborate attention being paid to the flake tools as well. Just today, I returned a hand axe that a professor up at Yarmouth University had loaned me for a while. I wish I hadn't done it. And if I'd held that thing up for you now, I'm sure I would hear a couple of oohs and ahs out of you, but we'll see. But anyway, this is the Acheulean period, which lasts, as you can see, for approximately a million years. And we see some change going through it from very, very crude to very, very excellent quality in stone toolworking. Now, here in the Middle East, there is some question whether or not we have anything older than the lower Acheulean. Is there, for example, an old Uwan industry that exists? In terms of the absence of crude hand axes at some of the sites, yes, maybe we do have some old Uwan industries. In Palestine, for example, there's a site called Wadi Shikma, very close to Gaza, which has a couple of choppers and the bone of a gigantic giraffe. Now, the gigantic giraffe itself indicates probably an age around 1 million years. The choppers look like old Uwan, but on the other hand, the choppers in the lower Acheulean also look like old Uwan. We simply don't have any hand axes in association with those choppers, but maybe the guy took the hand axe with him as he left. We don't have a good date. This might be around a million years, but that could also be early Acheulean. It might be old Uwan or early Acheulean. In Syria, there is a site called Sharia. which again, you find a couple of chopping tools, two very crude flakes. The flakes have gigantic balls of percussion, very steep angles on the platform. Again, the entire ensemble looks old, but on the other hand, simply because there are only five or six artifacts at the site and there's no hand axe, this could be a problem of sampling. Where these things lie, maybe 5 meters away, was the hand axe the guy was using, but they just didn't find it. Maybe it was washed away. We can't say. The sample is too small to say whether it is definitely old Uwan or if it's definitely early Acheulean or even middle Acheulean. There's another site in Lebanon called Borj Kinaret, very close to Sidon, where they have two choppers, two spheroids, and several utilized flakes. This would fit the old Uwan industry very well, but again, we're restricted to a sample size of only 6 or 7 pieces. It's difficult to make decisive judgments with samples as small. The ideal would be to have something at least 100 artifacts in the collection before you make a typological assignment. So these three sites are candidates, perhaps, for the old Uwan, but I think it would be very dangerous to say they definitely are. They all occur in circumstances where it's right at that 1 million year turning point when the old Uwan does eventually become or develop into the lower Acheulean, but to say it's one or the other, I think would be too dangerous to do right now. The oldest site for which we have definitely good evidence of antiquity in terms of solid dates is a site called Ubeidiyya. It's located in the Jordan Valley, right at the tip of Lake Tiberias. Okay. Ubeidiyya. Now, Ubeidiyya was occupied by Homo erectus. We found they found, I didn't dig there, they found the top of a skull of Homo erectus, and there's no doubt that this is the person responsible for the manufacture of the tool. It's an extensive site covering hundreds of meters, hundreds of square meters, and there are three major periods of occupation, all of them taking place before the Jordan Valley looked like the Jordan Valley today. The site was located on the edge of a lake, and this lake, during the periods that the people were settled there, had expanded and contracted at various times, sometimes covering the lake with deposits of marls, or normal lake sediments. Other times, when the people were living on the site, obviously they weren't living in the lake, there were then fluvial deposits, indicating not only the contraction of the lake, indicated not only a reduction in rainfall during these periods of time, but also the deposits of sands and gravels also indicate a drier climate where periodic rainfall would land on fairly arid landscapes and cause severe erosion. And this would be then deposited right on the bank of the lake. Draw you a general picture of the site situation. It was a shallow lake, as I say, which expanded and contracted according to the rainfall. There were gently sloping hillsides with a fairly steep cliff. There were trees, apparently, always on top of those, on top of the hills, and occasional little parkland-like forests, but mostly open grassland in between. Along the shore of the lake were normal aquatic plants like reeds, fairly dense kinds of plant communities alongside, and the people occupied the location right at the side of the lake. It would have been a very nice hunting sort of location. A lot of animals would have come down to the lake for water. These people always had water for themselves. Plus we don't know for sure, but they may have been eating some of the freshwater shellfish and perhaps even the fish from the lake itself. The animals that they were hunting included hippopotamus, which is a spectacle on the shore of the lake. That must have been a very fun thing to do, kill a hippopotamus with a wooden spear. Doesn't look like it had any other tools to kill a hippopotamus with. Living on the open grassland, probably. They were also hunting elephant, or an ancestor of a modern elephant today. They also were hunting giraffes, and a wide variety of birds, and a wide variety of smaller animals. Now, all of these animals suggest a very African-like fauna, and in fact, this African fauna characterized the Near East for almost all of the Ice Age. Now the industry, the stone tools they made, were primarily choppers. A very wide variety of shapes. Sometimes the choppers would be on a slant. Sometimes the choppers would be on the end of a long cobble. Sometimes the choppers would have, in fact, two edges. A wide variety of choppers forming the bulk of the stone tool industry. But they also had some very crude hand axes. A great deal of variation in size. Some of them were very short, stubby little things. Some of them were gigantically long things. But the main thing was very crude retouch. Sometimes, like I say, no more than five or six flakes removed from each surface with very, very deep negative bulbs of percussion. So if you look at it from the edge, you kind of ask yourself what they could cut with something that crude like that. We don't know what they were used for. The pointed ones very likely were used for piercing the thick skins of animals, especially the hippopotamus and the elephant. But these cutting edges on the side, I'm not sure, that may just be a slight improvement on the quality of the chopper edge instead. There are also this tool type that I mentioned at Sharia, the spheroid. Spheroid is the tool at Ubadiyya that apparently received the most attention. As the name implies, it's more or less spherical, except that it's covered by hundreds of facets. They would have taken a very large piece of stone, and by removing hundreds of fairly small flakes, they get this polyhedron in a spherical shape. Now, what the heck are they used for? Some people in Africa, or I should say the Linkies in Africa, had suggested they were used as bolas. They would have three of these things tied together in leather bags, swing them over the heads, and throw them at the legs of animals. Now that's a possibility for some of these, but some of these are this size. And you get a rock that big, you're not going to swing three of them. If you do, you're probably going to end up knocking your head off. It takes a lot of strength. And Homo erectus is not... Homo erectus is probably about the size, the general stature of most of the Oriental Asiatic populations today. Maybe about this high. So he was not any strapping, muscle-bound big hulk. So I don't think that anyway all of the spheroids were used as bolas. They may have been crushing tools of some kind. Crushing what? Animal bones? Some kinds of plant material? I don't know. Nobody does. But spheroids formed an important part of the Ubadiyya industry, and as I said before, they seem to have received the most attention in terms of detail, in terms of quality of work.
Was this flaked off?
Yeah. It's very difficult to do, to make something round by flaking it, but they did it.
Could they use it as a meat tenderizer?
Yeah.
It's almost what it looks like. You know, what were their
sure.
teeth like?
Their teeth were pretty much like ours, pretty strong. Yeah, they're probably just banging a hippopotamus on the head. Oh, they would feed it to the hippopotamus, and it would die of hunger or something. I don't know. Catching its throat and drown. I don't know. But it could serve a variety of purposes, and we'll never be able to find out exactly what, I don't think. Maybe.
Those were hard hammer.
Yeah, this is all hard hammer tip. Another major tool in the industry was something called the trihedral pick. Yeah. As the name implies, it's a very sharp implement. In cross section, it's triangular all the way down its length. And instead of having retouch on only two edges, like on a normal hand axe, which has only two edges that come around the side, this actually has three edges. And so they were retouching, removing flakes, not only on these two, but also from this one. Like that. So these triangular pick-like implements, again, very sharp at the tip, possibly used for butchering of these thick-skinned animals, but again, they could also have been very effective for grubbing out roots of various kinds of plants, either near the lake, probably where there's going to be a lot of bulbous plants, or perhaps on the hillsides themselves. Now, very much like the Oldowan industry, they do have a lot of flakes, and a lot of the flakes do show little nibbling as a result of being used, but the edges of the flakes have not been intentionally shaped. They're just using the flakes as they come off the core, using them as sort of natural knives, not really caring too much about what the shape looks like. In terms of scrapers, if they were preserving the skins of these animals, either they had to use very crude scrapers, or they simply weren't doing it. They were just butchering for the meat and perhaps not using the elephant skin or other kind of animal skin for clothing or for tents. Now, as I said before, there are three main phases of occupation, each one slightly different than the other. In the first phase of occupation, which we're not sure how long it lasted, we don't know how long any of these phases lasted, the industry is primarily choppers, spheroids, and flakes. And in fact, it looks exactly like an old Oman industry. The second phase is hand axes, trihedrals, and then flakes. And then in the third phase, it goes back to this old Oman looking material again. So you might ask, well, why don't you say it's old Oman? Why do you say it's lower Acheulean or earlier Acheulean? Well, I don't know. The people who excavated it did originally call it old Oman, but there are enough crude hand axes in that old Oman looking material to indicate that if it's not early Acheulean, it's at least developed old Oman. And then finally I said, let's scrap it all. Let's just call it early Acheulean because we have a fairly good date for it now. So we'll call it that. In the Ubadiyya area, there are three major kinds of resources available for making stone tools: basalt, limestone, and flint. And it seems that the Homo erectus populations were selecting each resource for a special kind of stone tool. Flint was the most popular for hand axes and choppers, and for the flakes. The spheroids, they preferred limestone, perhaps because limestone is softer and a little bit easier to make around. And then finally, basalt was used for some hand axes and for some of the picks. Now, the dating of this thing is fairly straightforward. I said before, we have three main phases of occupation, and these are separated by the expansion of the lake covering the earlier occupations, and finally this last one is covered by basalt. The volcanoes on the Jordan, on the eastern side of the Jordan Valley, became active, covered the entire valley floor at the time, sealing in all of the Ubadiyya material. Now this basalt was able, we were able to use potassium argon dating, and it indicates that all three occupations took place before 690,000 years ago. So it's in the neighborhood of 750,000 years old. The suspicions are that it's closer to 690,000 than to 750,000, simply because this basalt is practically on top of that last occupation. And although we don't know how long each of these was, it probably was not separated by a long period of time, not in terms of hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years. Now the curious thing is that the Jordan Valley used to look like this, but now if you go to that area, the Jordan Valley looks like that. Sometime after 690,000 years ago, the bottom fell out. These, in fact, as this dropped, and it did just simply drop into a void in the earth, all of these levels curled up on each other, sort of forcing themselves in like this, so that as you dig down from the top to the bottom, normally, you know, this means you're going from the most recent to the oldest, you would, in fact, go most recent to oldest to most recent to oldest to most recent. It's very difficult excavation, apparently. And in fact, that sometimes the people were actually digging more than the vertical. Worry about these limestone spheroids coming down on top of you. But that's the way they did it. And you have to admire the courage, I guess. So that's the oldest well-attested site in terms of the date. There's no question of the date of the the salt.
It is probably the only lower Acheulean site that we know, the only well-attested lower Acheulean site. There are other sites in Palestine and even here in Jordan. There's been one claim for a lower Acheulean site, but none of these are in situ. That is, they're all disturbed deposits. The artifacts have been torn out of their original deposition by water action, rolled down hills or canyons, and then deposited again. So we don't have any really good clue of the original age. And in fact, as these hand axes especially start rolling down some of these wadis, they become cruder looking simply because they're banging off other stones. One of these sites is here, as I mentioned, here in Jordan. I've only seen one of the hand axes. It's up near Pella, above Pella, and it's been analyzed by Linda Villiers, an Australian who's coming back to work here within a month from now. She thinks it's lower Acheulean. On the other hand, I think it's very possible that it's either middle Acheulean, or it may not even be Acheulean at all. It may be a large number of stones that have rolled down wadis, producing hand axe-like material, but it may in fact be natural. But we'll have a chance to look at it this year when she returns. The middle Acheulean, as I said, begins at about 500,000 years ago. So we've got a gap here of 250,000 years. We don't have any information at all. After the end of Ubadiyya, we don't really see any good evidence until about 500,000 years ago. And this may indicate that the area was uninhabited. Well, that's not necessarily so. That's a long time, a 500,000 years ago. And we have a problem called archaeological visibility. The older the period, the fewer the sites you're going to see, simply because it's either been covered up and you can't see it anymore, or it's been absolutely destroyed by erosion. So there is this long period, about 250,000 years, where there's no information at all until the beginning of the Middle Acheulean. Then we start to see a few more sites than is the case for the Lower Acheulean. One of the most interesting is a site called Jizr Banat Yaqub. It again is very near Lake Tiberias, although it's on the other side of it this time. It's his name after a bridge that crossed I guess it's the Jordan River that goes into Tiberias, I don't know, whatever it is. Again, it's a very extensive site in terms of hundreds of square meters of occupation, but it has some very interesting curiosities about it. One of them is that although flint is abundant all over the area, almost, change it, almost 99% of the artifacts are made in basalt. Now, this is sort of a strange preference. There's only one other area in the world where people seem to prefer basalt for the manufacture of stone tools, and that's Africa. And in fact, when we look at the kinds of tools they're making, see another African connection. Of all the hand axes they made, half of them are one type only. They don't make a wide variety. They make two or three types of pointed shapes or rounded shapes, but then half of them are cleavers, a very special kind of hand axe that has obvious parallels with the meat cleavers used by butchers today. Now, in the Near East, cleavers exist as a real tool type, but especially here in the Jordan Valley and in Palestine, cleavers rarely exceed 3% of the hand axes. So out of 100 hand axes, if you're getting 4, this is abnormal in a way. But here, 50 of those would have been cleavers. Cleavers, instead of having a pointed tip or even a rounded tip, like this, have a meat-cutting cleaver edge. where one blow on one side is very, very shallow, and there would be probably a blow on the other side as well. And if you look at it in profile, a very, very sharp slicing edge all along the top of that thing. That's the cleaver. Here, they're primarily made on large flakes of basalt. First, they knock the huge flake of basalt off, and then we're able to use, in fact, just one blow across the tip. We wouldn't have to do it on the second side. There are other cleavers here, we'll talk about this next time, up here in the highlands of Jordan, where they make it from flint, and they also make it from cores, not flakes. But they come out with the same effective cutting edge. Now, the preference for basalt and the high percentage of cleavers is very, very characteristic of the areas around Kenya and Tanzania. Now, in fact, if you look at this material, it's almost like a group of 150 people came up from Africa, spent 2 weeks at Lake Tiberias, got tired of the fish and went back home. It's hard to say. But it's the unique site like this. No other site even approaches it in terms of this combination of two things. They were hunting elephant at least. There was one elephant tusk found that had been chopped off near the edge of the mouth. They probably did not use the ivory for anything because it was just lying there. It probably just was easier to get into the head or something. We didn't have to fight this big tusk. It's hard to say. Another Middle Acheulean site, which is fairly well dated, is the site of Latumni, up near Hama in Syria. Latumni is a fairly small site. It looks like it may have been the hunting camp and maybe sleeping camp for only a couple of days. Not more than a couple of hundred tools, all of them fairly crudely made in terms of using a lot of hard hammer technique, although there were enough pieces with soft hammer technique to indicate a Middle Acheulean industrial association. They, in fact, had camped at a big bend of the Orontes River, and obviously were taking advantage of animals which had come down to the river for drinking or something. A lot of elephant. Archidiscodon is the elephant ancestor they were chopping up quite a bit. They also apparently moved some very large slabs of limestone, which were downhill from the site, the hill here, up to the site and used these as butchering slabs, because the limestone slabs do not occur normally anywhere in the immediate vicinity of this site. The closest was down the hill, or across and down the hill where they were. The shapes of the Latumni hand axes especially are characteristically Middle Acheulean. That is primarily these ovate shapes or sort of sub-rectangular shapes like this. These are called ovates. These are limand. They also had the pointed shapes, the triangular shapes like this, but not very many. By far, these large, long hand axe shapes were the major ones. In terms of the flake tools, they had fairly well-developed flake tools. They were changing the shapes, but kind of crude. Certainly an improvement on what they were using at Ubaidia, but they hadn't really caught on yet to shaping the edges of flakes. They were, in fact, going to have to wait for another 100,000 years before they really did some good work. Very little of any Lebalawa material at Latumni, suggesting it's in the earlier part of the Middle Acheulean, close to the 500,000 year mark. Remember, at about 300,000 is when we start to see Lebalawa technique. Now, until last year, Jordan did not have any Middle Acheulean sites known, which is not too surprising since nobody has really looked for any of this older material. probably all aware that most people come over here to dig Bronze Age or later sites or Neolithic sites. And in fact, it was just by chance that on a picnic one weekend, the Randy Old family and I were driving around, and finally it was dark. We had stopped someplace, and we set up tents and had supper and went to sleep. And the next morning, just noticed we had set up our tents in the middle of a hand axe field at a place called Jebel Uweinat. This is out near Azraq. Here's the Azraq Castle. Here's the Air Force Base out of South Azraq. As you go down to Khazar Amra, there's a huge hill of basalt. Of course, there's basalt all over the place north of Azraq. This seems to be the last outcrop of basalt. And it was in the wadi just to the south of this Jebel Uweinat, this basalt hill, that we had camped accidentally. And when we woke up the next morning, Randy brought something over and he said, "Is this anything?" They always do that. And of course, I just about jumped out of my shoes because it was the earliest stuff that we've seen in Jordan. In fact, I've got some of the material here. I'm sure you'll agree with me. It's fairly crude. Look how wavy those edges are, especially that one. I've got some drawings you can look at later on. Here again, it's not quite a trihedral pick. It's got a triangular cross-section. Oh, actually a quadrangular cross-section. But they're only removing it from the sides. But again, if you count the number of scars they removed, they're very small, averaging about 8 to 9 per side. What this indicates is they use very little secondary retouch. In the original shaping of the edge of the hand axe, they would make the original retouch would be only 3 or 4. Now, in later times, they would then go to secondary retouch and smooth those edges out quite a bit, change the jagged contours of the edge. Small flake scars that kind of refine the edge after the original roughing out of the shape. Actually, we have two series of hand axes from Jebel Uweinat. We have the Middle Acheulean crude, and we have an excellent Upper Acheulean well done. These are in much worse shape. They've been rolled around a lot. In fact, the site has been completely destroyed by erosion. These are just left on the surface. And it was kind of disappointing because we couldn't find any flake tools or any flakes that may have been utilized. These have all evidently been washed away, no longer to be found in the area. The site situation of Jebel Uweinat would have been up close to the top, probably, of that basalt hill. The wadi is a small sort of corridor. Possibly they were using the site as a trap of some kind. The wadi simply comes up and then it doesn't connect with anything, except towards the southeast it connects with probably the old Lake Azraq. But the animals coming to and from Lake Azraq may have used this wadi as a migration route, and they may have been waiting in ambush and dispatching these animals the best way they could.
Gary, you say those tools are made of flint.
Yeah.
And yet it's on the site of a basalt hill.
In fact, it's difficult to visualize what the landscape was like back then because there's been so much erosion, not only by water, but also by wind. Now that basalt, we don't know when it was deposited. We could date the basalt, but that costs money, and anybody want to contribute, please. The basalt, whenever it was deposited on top of flint outcrops. And in fact,
at the top of that mountain, covered with basalt, but that wadi goes through hills of not covered by basalt. And here there are great giant outcrops of flint. The people here obviously did not like to use basalt because they didn't find any, or the basalt came after the site was already destroyed. It'd be interesting to go out and do a sample of the basalts in the Azraq region. According to Frederick Bender, there are some basalts as recent as 4,000 years ago, so it'd be 2000 BC, and there are some that go back millions of years. But there might be something in the middle here that might be this basalt, for example, might be covering a site. If that's too old, certainly nobody's going to dig it. You know, if it's 4.5 million years old, there's no purpose in digging under the basalt. If this basalt's only 250,000 years old, it might be worthwhile investigating this area. Now, in terms of the shapes of these hand axes from Jebel Uwena, there are these sort of triangular shapes, more or less like this, but for the most part, they're like latumni. The ovoids, the ovates, and the mons are the most frequent. I think we have two cleavers, so it's that forms only 12% of the small sample we have. We have 16 hand axes from the wadi, but this forms 12%. It's certainly more than the normal 3%, but when we're comparing Jisurbanat Yaqut and Latumne and Jebel Uwena now, that's only three sites, so we don't really know what the range of variation is. Is 12% high, or is it medium, or what? We don't know. In terms of the length of the hand axes from Jebel Uwena, it fits in very, very nicely with the Middle Acheulean. Through time, here in the Near East, the average length of hand axes decreases through time. So the earliest material is not only very long, it's crude, but it's very long. But as time goes by into the late and into the upper and final Acheulean, they become much shorter. So a few statistics here. Jebel Uwena, 139. Ubadiya, the latest one, the middle one, is 138. Jisurbanat Yaqut, 144, and Latumni, 166. Now, in the late Acheulean, after the middle Acheulean, you suddenly see a drop to about 115 as a general average for the late Acheulean material, for the longest late Acheulean period. So this fits in very nicely with the middle Acheulean of the Near East. Again, there probably are a lot of Middle Acheulean sites in the area, but one of the major problems we've had, or one of the major problems I face as a prehistorian, is that nobody has gone out looking for the material. On Burton McDonald's survey last year in Wadi al-Hassa, we found what may be another Middle Acheulean site, but unfortunately here we found only one hand axe. And although I call it Middle Acheulean, I probably shouldn't have, because you can't pick up one crude piece and give it a date. One of the things to remember is that all the way through this material, all the way through, in fact, the Neolithic, people are making choppers. So if you pick up one chopper, you can't really say that this is Old Uwan, or it's Early Acheulean, or Neolithic. The same thing is true of the Acheulean. The hand axe we found in the Wadi al-Hassa is very crude. It has very jagged edges with very obviously hard hammer retouch, but these also exist in the late Acheulean. It's just that in the late Acheulean they happen to refine other hand axes, so you can find both at the same time. But it's still promising anyway. I think the more we look, the more chance we're going to have for this earlier material, and
once we have a broader perspective of what the environments were like back in 500,000 to 250,000 years ago, we might even have better clues of where to look. Inshallah, we'll be able to find some of the Wadi Bayer on Scott Ralston's survey out there. I think it would be an excellent place, especially along the rim of the basin. But so that's it for tonight. Next week, we'll begin with the Late Acheulean and the Middle Acheulean. Late Acheulean and the Middle Paleolithic. These do get confusing. We'll have a couple of case histories for the Late Acheulean here. Any questions?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you primarily date the fossils from the axis by crudeness.
Yeah, hypologic.
By the soil you found or the
Well, you would normally use all the information you could, but most of these are coming from the surface. So if they're not buried with other things you can date, you have to rely on what the quality of the technology was and the predominant shapes of other things that are associated with it on the surface, maybe. So if you find a lot of fine retouched flake tools with crude hand axes, you might have to say, I just have some crude hand axes from the Late Acheulean because of the fine retouched flake tools. Yeah?
You said that the final Acheulean began around 80,000
years ago? Yeah, 100,000 to about 80,000.
But the lower Paleolithic, before 80,000?
Yeah. The Middle Paleolithic lasts from 80,000 to 35,000. So.
Oh, the lower lasts 80 to 35?
No, that's the middle.
Yeah. So before 80,000,
yeah. Everything. All the way back to 2.5 million years.
Okay. Yeah. Acheulean.
It's one part.
Talking culture.
Yeah, the Acheulean culture is one part of the lower Paleolithic industries. Okay. It's got the hand axes, it's got the use of fire, different parts of the world being unplugged. You really see a deep negative bulb on that one. Yeah.